Welcome to a new edition of the Famous Interviews with Joe Dimino. On this episode, we talk with film and TV actor, entertainer, journalist, and Hall of Fame musician Randall Franks. Over his very rich life, he's created opportunities for success in music, in bluegrass, gospel, country, and Americana, and in television, film, books, and serving others through nonprofits and local elected office. He is best known for his TV role in The Heat of the Night and becoming a regular guest star on the Grand Ole Opry and the Nashville Network. In 2022, he is directing and starring in his short film, The American's Creed, set during the American Revolution. Whether it's music or acting, as a youth, he was mentored by legends like Bill Monroe, Jim and Jesse, Carol O'Connor, Larry Hagman, Ken Curtis, and so many others. He's got a great story. Enjoy this interview.
When I look at what you've done in your life, it looks like you've lived about four or five lifetimes.
Been very blessed to have a lot of opportunities come to me. And I just, every time the door opens, I rush through it before it slams shut.
You know, that sage advice, I think, for a lot of young people out there. I always remember what Mark Twain said towards the end of his life. He said he didn't regret what he did in his life. He regretted what he didn't do, and I think that's a pretty big deal when you can, you know, just grab the moment and go with it.
And I think opportunities come to you that God opens those doors, and you know, of course, we have the free will to say yes or no, and I think that's oftentimes He's opening those doors for us so we can find something new and a great adventure in the process.
So before we get into your life and kind of how all of finding your motivation, your paths that you found, how did you do during COVID? I know, especially working in the entertainment industry, it was a big jolt. How did you do, and how did that time period, the two-year window, change you?
Well, in many respects, that as many of my compatriots in both the film and television, March 13th, I know the day because I was standing at the Capitol of the Atlanta, the Georgia State Capitol in Atlanta, celebrating the success of the film industry alongside many of the other actors, producers, and directors, along with our state governor and many of our legislators. And that's when the word of COVID really started murmuring through the industry. And, of course, the next day, that industry shut down. And within the next few days, the music industry shut down. And I had been blessed in the prior year, in 2019, with two number one albums. And 2020 was going to be a very great music year for me from a booking perspective. And everything went away. So the realization of the life that I had led as an entertainer for my entire career, it just evaporated. And it was sobering in many respects. I felt I had to learn new ways of trying to create opportunities. And I was finding all of the old tricks were gone. You know, things that I used to do to create productive days from the perspective of at least monetarily were not working anymore. Of course, from a creative perspective, it was very good because then I just turned inward and started creating new music, new content for books. And, you know, I used the time wisely, but wondering what in the world I was going to do with it once it was ready to go.
So for someone as highly motivated and acclaimed as you are in so many different realms, you know, TV, film, writing, and music, how did all this begin? Talk to me a little bit about where you were born and raised and how these motivators began for you in the beginning.
Well, I started my career from Georgia. Of course, I'm talking to you from my home in the Appalachian Mountains in North Georgia. And, you know, my early influences were primarily in my family. In fact, yesterday we had our family reunion, and I remember as a child going to our family reunions and watching cousins and uncles and aunts play music. And my great-grandfather was a fiddle player, and that music sort of emanated through different branches of the family. That early influence had a huge impact The next thing that influenced me beyond just my family was seeing a couple of different acts appear on television. The Dillards as the Darlings on the Andy Griffith Show, and Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs on the Beverly Hillbillies. And those two acts changed my life in many ways, because when I was a kid, I looked at them and said, that's what I want to do. And so for me, that began the desire to want to learn to play. And then as from that point on, it just sort of evolved to the point that I started bringing together other young people of like mind and like taste from the elementary schools in our area. And we gather at my home with my parents, and we gather on Friday evenings, and we'd have jam sessions, and then we'd move over to one of the other parents' home on another Friday night. We sort of alternated, and we had early stars of country music who were involved in the WSB Barn Dance out of Atlanta. They would come to our jam sessions, and they would teach us, and they'd encourage us, and eventually that group of kids made up the core of my first band, and then we started going out and touring, and we started like everybody else, anywhere that anybody would listen to us, a flea market, an auction barn, an elementary school auditorium, wherever we could go, and blessings of great opportunities eventually in just a few years there carried us to the Grand Ole Opry, and, you know, I've been doing it ever since.
So it seems like a foregone conclusion, but I do want to ask, were there any other dreams that you had, or was it really kind of written in the stars that the entertainment industry was where you were going to go?
I think it was written in the stars, because from my earliest memories of even as childhood, I was a very sickly child, and I didn't get to do a lot of the things a lot of other young boys would do. I was not able to play football and do a lot of things. So the instrument was a godsend for me. And I think that's one of the reasons that that avenue opened up. So I envisioned that to be what I was going to do. But even as I was doing it, you know, throughout my life, you know, my parents were very practical people. And they taught me that they encouraged this. They encouraged my entertainment side, but they said, you've always got to have something to fall back on. So I remember when I was just started college, Bill Monroe, the father of bluegrass music, had asked me to come and play for him. He had already opened the doors for me at the Grand Ole Opry for my band, but then he had a change in personnel in his band, and he asked me to go out and tour with him as a member of his bluegrass boys. And at a festival in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, my parents and he went off and had dinner by themselves. And it was years later that I found out what their conversation was. But basically, he was asking my parents to allow me to go on the road with him and be full time. You know, I worked with him for a couple of months, and then I was going to go back. I left college, was able to talk my professors into it, and I did all of my courses on the road from the bus. But they knew I could not sustain that, and they wanted me to finish my college. So that became a personal agreement between me and my parents. They wanted me to have a degree in my pocket and still pursue music as I wanted, but they wanted that thing to fall back on, and that sort of always stuck. I've always had, you know, no matter what I did on stage or on camera, I always learned everything else around what I was doing, so that I could go to work in a record company. I could go to work. I could direct a film. I could light a film. I could do some screenwriting. Of course, when you run into the challenge that we hit the last couple of years, you know, all of those vocations, once again, just like the being in front of the camera and on stage, evaporated. So, except for the creative part, as far as the monetary part, evaporated.
So, you know, whether you've been a musician or you've acted, you've had wonderful people around you, legends, you know, standing on the shoulders of giants, so to speak, from, you know, Bill Monroe, you mentioned, Larry Hagman, Ken Curtis. What did they teach you, not only about your craft, which you talked about diversification and some of those things, What did they teach you about being human? I think that's a big part of this too.
Well, I think the humanity of the key thing, and you point some great people, Larry Hagman, Ken Curtis, Carol O'Connor's another. But I'm going to lean on another man who was who gave me a great deal of time. His name was Roy Rogers. Of course, his stardom was huge in the 1940s and 50s and 60s. Of course, it carried on throughout his life. But tens of thousands of young people looked up to Roy Rogers, and they wrote him. And one of the things that I sat down with him one time, and he said, "Son, you have chosen to be in this business. And when you chose that, you gave your life to everybody out there. You are part of them now. You're here to be part of their lives." And I think that's the humanity of it in many respects. All we have in this life is to give ourselves to other people. It's what we share, what we give away, whether that's our gifts, whether that's our time, and every bit of it is important. Every minute that passes is important. The time that we share with other people, the gifts of what we create and how that uplifts them, whether it's the 3-minute song, whether it's the 2-hour movie, whether it's the few minutes that you appear on the screen in somebody's television show, for that moment in time, you're there to take them away from their problems, their issues, whatever they're facing in that day, and hopefully make them think, give them a smile. And that same time that you spend, and I've had the pleasure of traveling across the United States and Canada, and I've spent hours standing beside what we refer to as a record table, where we're sharing our books and our records. But the most important part, even more so than the books and the records that we're there sharing, is that couple of minutes that we look somebody right in the eye and we listen to what they have to say. We hear their stories of what they're facing. They may be coming up and saying, you know, your song that you sang, it took me back to my childhood, and it made me remember my grandfather or my grandmother. Or it may simply be they want to say, "I saw you in this movie, and that movie changed my life for this reason." That moment, that's what it's all about. What everything that I do in this life is the opportunity that God gives me to stand in front of another individual and humanly connect with them. To have that opportunity to shake their hand, to look them in the eyes, and for us, for that moment, to share each other's lives. I think that's the greatest thing that we give, and I think that's the lesson that Roy was trying to share with me. All of those people you mentioned, Larry Hagman. One time I saw Larry, and I thought this was wonderful. It was a young man came up. I was watching, asked Larry for an autograph, and Larry said, "Okay, give me a Bible verse, a poem." I thought there was a third thing, but those two things stick out in my mind. But he gave me a Bible verse or a poem. And so the young man had to recite something, and then he said, "Okay, here you go." But I asked Larry, "Well, why did you do that?" He said, "Because me giving him that signature would have just been something that he would have put on a shelf and it would not have been of importance, but because he had to give something for it, that signature will mean more to him later in life because he had to give something in return." I thought that was an interesting approach.
You know, one of the things that I do quite a bit is I interview jazz musicians, and along the way, I have kind of arced into bluegrass. And are you familiar with Buster Roper by any chance?
Buster Roper, I'm afraid not. Tell me about us briefly about him.
Buster he has a bluegrass show here in Kansas City, and he's well known. He interviews musicians. He loves the craft. And I've watched, and I don't know him as well as my engineer for my show, John Christopher, but I know how passionate he is about the craft and the musicians. And I know how the bluegrass community has such a great legion of fans, and there's such a kindred spirit that goes into it. And I'm curious with you, What kind of honor was that to get to the Hall of Fame and to be recognized for all these years of what you've done?
Oh, it was amazing. I remember when I got to go back, this has been 11 years ago now, and the Hall of Fame invited me up, and of course, to go and sit amongst other members of our bluegrass community who I've looked up to for years. And of course, many of them I played on stages with. Some of them, you know, simply appeared in other festivals with. But I jokingly, I remember there was a disc jockey from up in the Northeast who came around and said, you know, what's it like to be with all the old geezers now? And I thought, well, that's interesting. At the time, I was blessed to be the youngest person there, the youngest person on the stage, but I was just so honored to be amongst the, you know, the people that I consider to be legends and to be on shows with them and spend my life, because bluegrass has been my life. As I told you, the Dillards and Flat and Scruggs were who inspired me to be part of this. And I did go on. I got to play Doug Dillard and his band. I was blessed when I was at the height of my TV career. They actually appeared as my performance band behind me. And I had the honor of playing with Earl Scruggs at the gospel music, the Greek National Quartet Convention, when he made an appearance there, and we had a lot of fun together. So those people inspired my life, but there were so many others. Jim and Jesse McReynolds of the Granville Opry, who just invested tremendously in my career. Bill Monroe, as I mentioned, who took the time when I was a kid, a teenager, to, you know, stand with me and say, okay, I tell you what, son, can you play this tune? And I said, yes, sir, play the tune. And in particular, first one I think of was Katie Hill. He looked at me and said, no, that's not the way you play that tune, son. That's just not the way it goes. I want you to play it like this. And then he would spend, you know, time with me, teaching me the phrases, exactly how he wanted it noted. And those are things that I've never forgotten. And to this day, I even share that with younger fiddlers or younger musicians. I say, no, that's not the way that goes. It should go this way. So I was very honored, obviously, to be recognized as a legend by the International Bluegrass Music Hall of Fame and so many great people that I've got to work with, the Lewis family, as I mentioned, Mac Wiseman, so many great performers and great fiddlers. I'm not sure when this is there, but you know, just this week I'm going up to the Grand Masters Fiddler Championship being held at the Country Music Hall of Fame, and I've had the honor of, for many years, being the celebrity host or co-host for that event. I took over for Porter Wagoner many years ago, but. You know, getting to see those young fiddlers come up and see what they can do for me is such a blessing. It's been an amazing adventure and journey in this bluegrass music and film world, and I've just been honored to be on it.
So let's talk about one of your more recent projects, The American's Creed. And I'm curious, you know, when we look at history tends to be a carousel. You know, we kind of repeat periods of history. What was it like to make this, knowing that there's parts of American history that are kind of repeating themselves right now?
You know, the focus, I think, of that project is primarily something that I think a lot of people in our country forget. I mean, we become complacent. We assume everything is always going to be the way it always was, or at least in our lifetime. And we forget what has been given for the distinction of the life that we live. And I love history. I've been a student of history my whole life. That's another way. Probably you said, well, what would I have done if I had not been in music? I'd probably wound up being a history professor somewhere. Because that is a passion of mine. So the focus of the American's Creed is looking during the American Revolution at, you know, I'm taking some characters and created a short film around actually one of my great-grandfathers who served in the Revolution and some of the what I perceive would likely have been his experiences at that time. Of course, history oftentimes is lost to us other than names and dates and periods. But another cousin of mine back in the early part of the 1900s wrote The American's Creed, which is the third leg in our trilogy of American pieces. We have the National Anthem, we have the Pledge of Allegiance, and the American's Creed. Those are the three legs to the stool, so to speak. And a lot of people don't know the Creed. His name was William Tyler Page. And so I thought a film that would carry us combining what some of the people went through back during the American Revolution along with the early 1900s perspective on what it was and what it means to be an American and to believe in the United States of America. And those two periods bringing together into a short piece that people could watch and hopefully be reawakened to what it means to live in this country and all those who have sacrificed before us to stand. It's an amazing thing that men stood up and gave their lives in various periods so that we could live in the freedom that we currently are supposed to have and in most cases still have.
So what's been the best fan letter or response that you've gotten over the years? I'm sure you've gotten just thousands and thousands of them, but is there, you know, one that really stands out to you?
Back during when I was on In the Heat of the Night, one of the things I got to do is the DARE program, Drug Abuse Resistance Education program, asked me to be the national spokesperson. And I traveled across the country speaking in middle schools and high schools around the United States, not the world. And, of course, saw tens of thousands of young people. Many of them wrote me, but I remember one in particular, the young man who wrote me about 2 years later. The letter got to me, and he basically described the life that he had faced in his family and how that the drugs and drug abuse had changed his young life. And not personally, but that it had been an influence among his family and thus impacted how his life and the course of his life had come. But the thing that he shared with me was those few words that I got to share with him when I stood in front of on the stage in front of him, at least to that point, had changed the direction of where he wanted to go with his life. That to me showed me that, you know, just like I was saying, that few moments that we stand and look in somebody else's eyes is the most important part of what we do as entertainers. I think that opportunity to stand on that stage, I don't recall that I ever met that young man while I was at the venue that we were performing at, but he remembered that, and I pray that the positive nature of what he described in his letter was the path that he chose, but it definitely comforted me to know that I was spending my time in a positive way that was having a positive impact on not only him and but hopefully others in the same way. But even if it didn't have an impact on any of the others that saw that one young man changing his situation and choosing a positive path was worth all of that effort.
Let's say tonight you have a dream and you run into your younger version, say around the time that you were really getting ready to get into the entertainment industry, you know, maybe in your early 20s, and you could give yourself one piece of advice based on all of the wisdom that you've accumulated over your life. What would you tell your young version?
Great question. Let's see. I believe I would, the main thing that I would share is spend more time enjoying what you were doing. Because a lot of times when you're in your early years of performing, you're constantly trying to make it. You're trying to get to that next level, whatever that next level is. And in that pursuit of climbing the ladder, oftentimes you miss the experience of what's going on around you. That's the personal thing that I would share, because I can look back at times when I think, boy, I wish I'd spent more time with this person or that person, possibly another artist or another actor. The other thing that I would say is don't get above your raisin. Because as you're going along the trail of becoming whoever you become in a career, oftentimes, you know, you get all those people patting you on the back and, you know, the old adage of, well, he gets a swelled head. We all get that at a point in times in our career. And I can think of a few times back when I wish that had not come along in my life, that I didn't have that moment where the ego was way too big for my britches, you know. And, you know, if I could go back, there's a few things I would go back and change in that process if I could do that. But thankfully, that's, at least from my perspective, that's not been a huge problem. But there's a few times I can look back when, you know, you felt like, oh boy, what's that line from the Titanic? I'm at the top of the world, Mars. Was that the Titanic or was that the James Cagney movie years ago?
Yeah, I think it was when they're on the deck of the boat, the Titanic.
Yeah.
You know, the one thing about your life is that you've played so many roles, philanthropist, you're a writer, musician, actor, you know, family man. There's all these things that are a part of who you are, your persona. So I'm curious, everyone around you sees you in a certain light, but you ultimately fuse all of those together and have a perception of who you are. Who do you think you are? What's your summary of who you think you are as a person?
Oh, that's a tough question. You're giving me some good ones here. I think that particular focus on how I see myself as who I am, I've always tried to be someone who other people would want to know. What I mean is, there's a wonderful lady who lives out in Arkansas. She's 105 years old. Her name is Violet Hensley. I was blessed to write her autobiography with her about a decade ago. She's a fiddler, prominent fiddle maker. She said to me when we were writing her biography, she said, if you want a friend, you have to be a friend. And I think more than anything else throughout my life, that's what I've wanted to be. I've wanted to be a friend. I've wanted to be a friend to everyone who's come into my life, and fusing all of these different avenues that God has opened for me together. I think that's been the key, is, you know, trying to create an opportunity to build relationships. And, you know, I've been blessed to bring people together from the film industry, the music industry, and everyday life, and put them in situations together that they may never have been, had an opportunity. Even when I was writing my Encouragers book series, you know, it's an amalgamation of people that from all walks of life that I saw as encouragers in my life. And being a friend, being an encourager, I think that's the key. I just want to encourage other people in my life. So I hope that's how people have seen me, and I hope that's how I still come across with every day, because, as I said, all we have in life is what we share with other people. So for me, being an encourager, being a friend is, no matter what avenue, what talents, what gifts I'm sharing at a given time, I hope that's what emanates from my heart to the other people's heart.
So you've spent your life, you have a prolific amount of material out there, and I'm curious, where's the best place for anybody that's listening right now that not only wants to learn more about you, but get your book, your music, to see films, TV projects you've been in? Where can they go to get that and find out what to do?
Well, I'm very blessed in that most everything is centered on our randallfranks.com website. You can go there and spend hours and be bored to death. But we've got, you can go to the randallfranks.com/store and you can find our most recent products, the books from my murder mystery, Imagine an Old Guitar, to the Encouragers book series, to my albums with Alan Autry, to our In the Heat of the Night Christmas album, films, recent films that I have on DVD. All of that's there. You can find us on all the social medias, at Randall Franks at Twitter, Randall Franks actor, director, entertainer on Facebook, Instagram. Just if you look up Randall Franks on whatever your favorite social media site is, you can probably find a page for Randall Franks and find out more about what we're doing. So please do that. And, of course, Randall Franks TV on YouTube, where you can watch all kinds of videos of me picking and grinning or talking about a movie that I might be giving a little interview from the set on.
That's wonderful. Randall, you're wonderful, man. Thank you for opening up. Thank you for all this wonderful work you've put out there, and I thank you for the time you've given me today to open up about your life and world.
Well, it's been my pleasure to be with you, Joe. Hey, do you want me to leave you with a little fiddle tune? I've got my fiddle handy right here. Would you like me to go out on something for you?
I don't think it would be complete without it.
Okay, here's a little tune that I used to play with Bill Monroe. It's one that I used to dance to. Thank you, Joe. Appreciate it.
Absolutely, yeah. They always say go out on a high note. You just did that. Thank you, sir.
Take care. My pleasure with you. Bye-bye.
Thanks for tuning in to another Famous Interview with Joe Domino, where we cover the world of art, literature, and music around the globe. If you want to hear more interviews, visit the Famous Interviews with Joe Domino channel on YouTube. Thanks again for listening, and until next time.